Also, the Lord directed those who proclaimed the gospel to get their living from the gospel. In accordance with what the Apostle Paul said in this passage, we are attempting to support the preaching of the gospel in the Philippines. We support Jim Putterbaugh, Aaron Curtis, June Gavina, Ray Granetta, Victor Ramos, William and Marion Morados, Pablo Quimada, Gerson Labid, and Olympio Sandalon. Those are the men we are currently supporting in the Philippines. But we have learned by experience that if you are going to support people in other places, you really need to maintain personal contact. And the reasons for that it'll be made more clear in a little while. Now, I am always very enthusiastic about going to the Philippines. I'm enthusiastic about maintaining that personal contact. The first time I went to the Philippines, I looked forward to it because it was exotic and new. I mean, it's Southeast Asia. I'd never seen Southeast Asia before. Wow, isn't that special? But by the third trip to that part of the world, the exotic has worn off. Every building has mold growing on it. And so by the time you have made your third trip to that part of the world, it is not exotic anymore. Now I am enthusiastic about going because I have friends there. And because I get to see some of the good work that is being done, plus it's just plain needful from the standpoint of the work of this congregation. So I was happy that I was able to go, and I hope you are going to be happy to hear about the trip. Now what I intend to do tonight is simply go over the trip, tell you where I was, who I was with, what I was doing, and show you some pictures. And you'll notice on the board, I kind of have a rough outline of where I was at any given point in time. Now, I will show pictures to go along with a rough outline, probably less pictures than we have shown in previous years, because we have seen the places before. We know what they look like. They have not changed at all. So we'll simply show a few pictures, go over where we were, what we did, and then to conclude, we'll make some observations about what we are doing over there and what is happening. Now, as far as the trip is concerned, here's how it started. Drove to San Francisco International, January the 25th, and immediately lost a day in flight. I got in the car about 10 o'clock in the morning. My dad and Eddie Joseph drove me to San Francisco. We drove straight there at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They put me off on the curb at San Francisco International, and they left so they could beat traffic out of town. Now, they dropped me off at 2 o'clock. My flight left at 9 o'clock that night. So I was in the airport for 7 hours. Now, somebody says, why was that necessary? If you've driven in the Bay Area, you know. You go in and you go out avoiding rush hour traffic, or you don't go anywhere. And they needed to be back that night, so they threw me out. Well, they didn't throw me out. I stepped out on the curb, and they took off. Now, for 7 hours, I did take a briefcase with me, and I had plenty of work to do. I found out that I really kind of enjoy sitting in an airport as long as I have something to do. I worked on sermons. I worked on organizing class materials. And it was really just like having an extra work day. About 9 o'clock that night, I stepped onto Philippine Airlines Flight 103 and flew for 17 hours. And it was dark all the way. When you take off at night going in that direction, it's dark for 17 straight hours, and you get there about 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, that's 6 o'clock Manila time. When it was 6 o'clock in Manila, it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon here the day before. But I lost the day before. So when I got there, it was Friday morning. Now keep in mind, Friday morning, this is going to be a long day. When I got to the airport, I've been there enough now that I can walk right through it, go through customs, find the money changers, and know how to get to the front door without getting lost. So I made it through very smoothly, and when I walked out the front door, Randy Hilburn was waiting for me. Randy and Judy, Randy preaches in Bakersfield, they had gotten there the day before. So he was there, he picked me up, and we went back to downtown Manila to the BSA Towers. That's the hotel. That's the lobby. You notice it's a little bit narrow, but it's really not too bad a place. If you're going to stay in Manila, this is where you want to be. The cab driver that took us there took us on a shortcut. He turned down an alley. This alley was a mile long, jam-packed with people, and when we first entered the alley, he reached behind and locked my door. And I knew this was not an alley that I wanted to be in for very long. I will not take that shortcut again. But we arrived at the hotel and went upstairs with Randy and Judy, and we sat and ate lunch, and we just sat and we talked about what we intended to do during the course of this trip. This is Friday morning. Our plane is not going to leave for Tegucigalpa till about 2 that afternoon. So we made plans. We stepped across the street to this, what actually is the nicest spot in Manila, as far as I'm concerned. This is like an outdoor mall, very well manicured. We found Seattle's Best right next to Starbucks. Starbucks, Seattle's Best, right next to each other, and I snapped that picture, and I'm sure they'll appreciate that greatly. But, you know, essentially, we're just waiting for the plane at this point in time. So after making our plans, when it was time, we started heading to the airport for our 2 o'clock flight. Now, when you look at that picture, it looks like Manila might be a pretty nice place. It isn't. Manila is not a town to spend time in unless you're with somebody. There are places that look pretty nice, but it is a big, dirty, poor and dangerous place to be. You just don't go by yourself. We arrived at the airport for the 2 o'clock flight, and immediately we were delayed an hour and a half for the flight. If you're a Filipino, it doesn't bother you. You realize that's the way things are done there. We knew there were people waiting for us in Tegucigalpa, which is in the north part of Luzon, but we also knew they wouldn't care. They'd just sit there and wait until the plane got there. So we finally got on the plane, flew up to Tegucigalpa, which is an interesting little airport. It's a little airport. It's shocking that that plane can land there. Well, we made it to Tegucigalpa, and we had just a big group of preachers waiting for us. That is Robert Gamayau, one of the most capable men and faithful and useful men in that part of the Philippines. The lectureship that we were going to have in Cebu, rather in Tegucigalpa, would be at his house in his garage. Robert was waiting for us, along with Aaron Curtis, who we support. Hopefully you remember Aaron. He preached for us here about a year ago, one Sunday night. He lives in the Philippines now because the U.S. government would not give his wife a visa. When he married Didith, the American government decided that it wasn't a real marriage. They were just trying to get her over to this country. So Aaron is now working in the Philippines. Ray Granetta was there at the airport. A couple of weeks ago, I preached a sermon, and we mentioned the preacher that immediately stood up and made a defense. That's Ray. And Victor Ramos, who has probably the biggest smile of any of the preachers in the Philippines. He works a lot with Ray Granetta. They travel a lot together because he actually has a vehicle, which is fairly uncommon over there. After being picked up at the airport, we went over to Robert's house for dinner, and after dinner, I took that picture just to let you know the Philippines are still the Philippines. You see a lot of this over there. We ended up at Ray's house, and then we went over to the Cagayan congregation where Robert and Aaron worked together. And they had a singing that night. They meet on Friday nights for Bible study and singing. Friday seems like an odd day to us. Evidently, it does not seem odd to them. That is one of their buildings that I have seen over there. They actually have windows that open and close. Aaron led the singing. You do not have any trouble getting Filipinos to sing. They really, truly enjoy getting together to sing. After the singing was over, I went to Aaron's house to spend the night. We got over there about 9 o'clock. By 9:30, this is still Friday, first day. About 9:30, I went to bed and woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Ray and Victor were also staying there. They had come up from Isabella to pick me up because the first weekend, that is Saturday and Sunday, got there on Friday the 27th, but Saturday and Sunday I was going down to Isabella where there are three men that we are supporting. Victor, Ray, and June Gavina. This is the trip down to Isabella. Very common. They do in the Philippines like we used to do in the United States. If you had a truck, you used it. They can still get by with that. You see, a lot of that, we went down there and June met us on the road. That is June Gavina. We are supporting him. June is a little bit older than he looks. We went to his house. Those are two of his daughters. He has four daughters and a son. Not real sure how old June is, but last time I was there, he was in this house. We sat and we visited for quite a while. This is still Saturday morning. Now, if you wonder why sometimes we take some money to distribute on the spot, this little girl here, she has a skin condition on her ankles that when June first showed it to me, I thought that it might be leprosy. I mean, it was truly bad. And June really wasn't doing anything because, you know, the medicine they gave him didn't seem to help any, so it was expensive, so he just quit. That did not solve that girl's problem, so something has to be done about that. Anyway, after visiting at June's house, Saturday morning, he took us to Damong West. That is a little congregation in the middle of nowhere. Actually, that is the first congregation where I ever preached in the Philippines 4 years ago, and I was back there on this trip. If you look at the congregation, it is slightly larger, and the people that were there 4 years ago largely are still there and are a little bit older. Now, here's June. Those are his four daughters and his son. This fella here is interesting. He has actually survived a poisonous snake bite. He was out in the rice field. A snake hit him in the leg. Boy, you ought to see the mess it made of his leg. Don't let anybody tell you snake bites don't leave scars, because this one definitely did. So I was there in Damong, was preaching, and while you're preaching in the Philippines, many things walk through the front door. The dog, the chicken. I had a picture of a cat, but I forgot to put the picture of the cat up here. At Villacacho, it was a large hog, but the hog never got in the front door, for which I was grateful. But we preached at Damong, met with the people there, enjoyed it immensely. And then June took me to the Tirad congregation. Told you about Tirad. We drove out in the middle of the rice fields, parked in somebody's front yard, and then walked down that path for about a quarter of a mile. And then when we got to the end of this path, we came to this spot where there were about half a dozen of these cinder block houses. You notice that cinder block? Here's a house, here's a house. Over the top, we have tarp and plastic. Now, in between those two houses is where the congregation meets. And you remember I told you about this. This place is hot. It is a hot day. I preached. Victor preached. A woman made her comment about baptism. Ray got up and preached the truth concerning what the New Testament had to say about infant baptism. This is middle of nowhere. One thing you'll notice about Philippine congregations, they do not have a lack of children. There are children everywhere in the Philippines. This congregation, talking about something we attempted to do, haven't succeeded yet, but we hopefully before the week is out. There's a young couple at this congregation. The wife became desperately ill. I mean, her life was in danger. The husband took her to the hospital. They had no money. They saved her life, but then they would not release her because in the Philippines, if you enter the hospital, they don't release you unless you pay your bill. And they didn't have any money, so they snuck out in the middle of the night. Now, in the Philippines, that is known as fleeing. And if you flee, when the police find you, they arrest you and put you in jail. So that was the situation of this young couple. So we determined that we were going to pay this hospital bill. And by their standards, it was a very expensive, they would never pay this bill off. It was a $400 hospital bill. That is a big chunk of money to people who are working in a rice field. So we determined that we were going to pay this bill, so we went to the hospital. This is Saturday. Now, we've gotten up, we've driven to Isabella, preached at DeMong, preached at Tirad, come into town to the hospital to see if we can pay the bill. There was one person working in the office, and since it was a quarter of five, they would not accept the money. So it's going to have to be done the hard way. Going into the hospital, I edited this sign a little. There were three signs up there at the entrance of the hospital. That's a hospital and that's the entrance. They're not shy people at all. It's goiter awareness week, and they'll show you what a goiter can do to you. This is World Leprosy Day. That's a foot. That's a face. But you never know it. In case you're wondering, there still is leprosy in the world. There was one more. I just didn't put it in. It was about breast cancer, and they just showed right out in public what happens if you don't take care of it. And it's awful. So, you know, this is just the kind of thing they display to get people's attention. And when you see things like this, you really, really feel fortunate about the way things are over here. When we went into the hospital, there was an open area. You walk through the entrance. You go right through the building. You go into an outside area that's kind of a courtyard. There are people laying on wood boxes. There are people laying in the dirt. There are people laying on the concrete, waiting and hoping for somebody to see them. It gives you the impression that you're looking at some kind of MASH unit or something like that. It is very sobering when you see what their medical care looks like in that part of the world. After we attempted that, it was time for Ray and Victor to take me back to Rojas. This is the end of the day on Saturday, the first day. That's a good example of what Philippine traffic looks like, only it's not as bad as it sometimes is. Usually you'll see less cars, more motorcycles. But the traffic in the big cities is incredibly heavy. We drove out of town, and on the way back to Rojas, where Ray and Victor are, we stopped by this lake. The only lake I've ever seen in the Philippines. They built that just for hydroelectric purposes, and it really is kind of a pretty little lake. They stopped, I think, just to prove to me that they had lakes in the Philippines. And so we kept going, and we got back to Ray's house in Rojas. And so it's Saturday night, just before the first Sunday there, and I'm staying at Ray's house, preached to two congregations and been up forever. So at 7:30 that night, I said, well, I'm going to bed. See you guys tomorrow. Went to bed at 7:30. I woke up. Wonder what time it is. Looked at my clock. It was 11 o'clock. So it just worked all night. That's all you can do. Got up the next morning. We went to Via Cacio and took a picture of the three little pigs. That's right outside the church building. The Via Cacio congregation where Ray preaches, again, they have no shortage of young people. Of the country congregations that I visited, the Via Cacio group seems to be the most stable. But you'll notice, again, the cinder block building, no windows, no door. They've got a roof over their heads, and that's pretty much it. Nice group of people. After visiting Via Cacio, we got back in Victor's car and we went to Santiago, which is even farther out in the country. Again, the cinder block building, you'll notice in the back, that's Victor. He preaches for this group here. We preached there. If you're a preacher, anywhere you go, they ask you to preach. And you may be in a place where they don't understand a word you say, and you don't know it until about halfway through your sermon. And you figure out they're just politely sitting there listening, even though they don't know what I'm saying. Now, that's not true in every congregation, but that tends to be true the farther you get out into the provinces. So this is Sunday. I've been to Via Cacio, I've been to Santiago, I've been up all night long, and I think, well, the day's over, but they say, no, we have to go one more place. Well, where are we going to go? We're going to go to the Army outpost. You remember me telling a story a little while back about Ray and Victor having a Bible study, and a guy comes in with a rifle drunk, threatens to shoot everybody? This is the Army outpost. Now, this Army outpost is not like we imagine an Army outpost. There's about 12 soldiers who are stationed at this outpost, and their job is to patrol the area for communists. Because the communists in this particular area, while they might not kill you, they might take you and hold you for ransom. Now, that's not right there. They're in the area that's next to the Kalinga province where they're going to go looking for them. But those are the buildings. Those are the barracks. There's the motor pool. Some of you won't know what I'm talking about, but some of you will. The rifles they are issued are M1s. M1s. That's World War II. In case you didn't know it. Good rifles, but nobody else is going to be using them now. Met the captain. Captain was a real nice fellow. Had a brief Bible study, and he really encouraged his soldiers to participate in Bible study. So it was, as far as I'm concerned, a very worthwhile activity. And that brought us to the end of the day. That Sunday night, the weekend is over. And that first weekend was down in Isabela. Monday morning, we're going to drive back up to Tegucigalpa. For the first week, January the 3rd through February the 3rd, we're going to be at the Tegucigalpa Lectures. Now, that sounds really impressive. This is in Robert Gamayau's garage. He sets up folding chairs. And that's about as nice a facility as you're going to have. We get up early in the morning, Monday morning. That's Victor, and that's Ricardo Ducane, who's going with us to the lectures. We get in the car early. We drive back to Tegucigalpa. It's about a two-hour drive. We get in at about 8:30 in the morning. And funny thing is, when we got to the outskirts of town, I don't know if you can see that sign. That says, stop, flag ceremony is going on. We're driving back into town, and we kind of drive by this little city hall. And they actually stopped traffic in both directions just to raise the Philippine flag. That makes you think, we've lost something over here. But I mean, we had to stop, and they didn't care how far traffic backed up. They were going to have a flag ceremony, and they did that every morning. You knew you were going to be stopping when they raised that flag. Now, we went back into town. We went to Robert's house. And Robert, I didn't know these ladies were there till about 3 days into the lectureship. They were out back cooking. That's why we put them up there. I suppose somebody cooked. I didn't know who it was, though. It was them. The lectureship is going on in the garage. Now, you see that person? You may think that's me when you look at the hair, but that's not me. That's Philippe. Got a little bit of hair like me, but he's not me. In some areas of the Philippines, well, I've told you this story before. When I first got there, they thought I was the Japanese preacher. Anyway, we're at Robert Gamayao's house. Here's what the schedule was. We have three speakers, Randy Hilburn, Aaron, and myself. During the course of the week, Randy will lecture on Jesus' use of Scripture. Aaron is going to be speaking on the life of David, and I was speaking on Romans chapter 6 through 8, sin and the Christian, and why the Christian had to die to the law of Moses. Now, three speakers, we each were preaching twice a day. Three sermons in the morning, three sermons in the afternoon, and then we would break, come back again at night, have a singing, and one of the locals would preach. I was accidentally pertinent. I didn't know what I was jumping into the middle of when I got there. And I'm really kind of glad I did. It worked out very well. They have trouble with what is called one covenant doctrine. And what that boils down to is that there are some preachers who attach way too much importance to the law of Moses. They intimate that the law of Moses really was never taken out of the way. Only perversions of the law of Moses were taken out of the way. And that is just obviously not true. And so during the course of the lectures in Cebu and to Gigerau, boy, that was just my topic. So the lectureship went on for a solid week, Monday through Friday. There were about 40 preachers in attendance in Gigerau, and we were at it 6, 7, 8 hours a day, so it was extremely busy. At the end of the week, on Friday, when it was all over, an example of how sometimes you don't want to let thoughts going through your mind come out your mouth. End of the week, taking some of the brethren to a drugstore because they don't have medicine. We're going to buy medicine. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. It's hot. I'm driving down this street, and I just absentmindedly said, I would give $10 for a mocha. And the car went silent. And Ray Granetta says, Brother Scott, you pay $10 for a cup of coffee? And I had to explain, no, I don't pay $10 for a cup of coffee. I was just being silly. So, don't let the thought come out your mouth without thinking about it first. Anyway, the day was over. The next day, Saturday, lectureship is over. We come to the lost weekend. Now, this is classified under Welcome to the Philippines, which the English guy behind us said as soon as this happened to us. Monday through Friday, we have the Tagigarao lectures. Saturday, we're supposed to fly back to Manila. We go to the airport. this is a partial picture of the group of preachers and everybody. In the Philippines, if you're going to the airport, everybody you know comes to see you off and say goodbye. So I had to take four or five pictures of different groups of guys who were there. This is one group of preachers that happened to be standing there. So we take the pictures, and Randy and Judy and I go into the airport. And once you go in, they have to leave because they can't go in anyway. So they leave. We're there at 9 o'clock to catch a 10 o'clock plane. We're sitting there. 9:30, an announcement comes on. The plane to Manila has been canceled. Take the plane tomorrow. They don't say why. They don't say if it's possible that one will be in that afternoon. It's just the flight's been canceled. And Randy, having been there a lot more than I have, grabs me and says, quick, let's go get in line. Well, for what? We'll just get the plane tomorrow. Yeah, let's go get in line. We get in line, and when we get to the counter, there were five seats left for the next day's flight. We got three of them. But had he not grabbed my arm and said, let's go, we wouldn't have gotten on the next day either. So this is a Saturday morning. We're standing at the airport. And what do we do now? Well, we call Robert Gamayo and have him come get us and take us back to the hotel. So we're going to be able to stay an extra night. Fortunately, I called Aaron up, and for the rest of that day, I was able to visit with Aaron. So that was profitable, and I was able to rest a little bit, and that was pretty nice also. The next Sunday morning at 10 o'clock is when the next plane leaves. And if you don't get that plane Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, you're going to be there till Tuesday. And we're starting a lectureship on Monday as far away from this spot as you can get and still be in the Philippines. We really didn't have a choice except to be on that plane the next day. So we made it on the plane, we got back to Manila, and we also knew that this was the only day we would have to be in contact with Jim Putterball. So we got in contact with Jim, and Jim sent his son Larry over to pick us up. Larry got us and drove us back into the area where Jim is now living. He's moved since the last time I was there. This is one of the nicer parts of Manila, and I was happy about that. But this is also the place where the police officer pulled us over and told Larry, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to take your license, and you're going to give me, and it's going to cost you 2,000 pesos to get it back. Or you can just pay me now. And so Larry says, well, I'll give you 100 pesos. And he says, not enough. Well, I'll give you 200 pesos. Okay. It's $4.76. That's the price for buying a traffic officer in the Philippines. That's a standard price, and everyone knows it. Just a plain old shakedown, and if you don't pay, they look at you like you're crazy, because if you go to the judge, you're really going to pay. So anyway, after paying the 200 pesos, we went and we saw Jim. Now, Jim, I don't know if you can tell from the picture, he has lost a lot of weight. His prostate is probably four times the size it's supposed to be right now. He's been in the Philippines for 33 years. When we got there, he just found out that while he was having a lot of trouble, severe infections, it was not cancerous. It was just fabulously swollen. He's trying to take care of it with medicine and vitamins and that kind of thing. I hope he's successful. When you just sit and talk with him, he looks okay and he can talk okay. If you see him stand up and try to move, you can tell how much weight he's lost and you can tell how rough things have been. He was supposed to go with us to Cebu and participate in the lectures, but he couldn't. He held out hope until the last minute, and then when he couldn't, it greatly complicated things. So he just kind of had to roll with it. Now, that was the weekend. You know, that's why I put the lost weekend. Nothing happened that weekend like it was supposed to. We were fortunate to get to see Jim at all. Now, the next morning, Monday morning, we got up and we flew to Cebu. Now, Cebu is right next to Negros, where we support several preachers. But this time around, we went to Cebu because we also wanted to meet some preachers from Mindanao. And it's a lot easier to get to Cebu from Mindanao than to get to Negros. So we kind of met there. If you look at the pictures, Cebu is considered one of the nicer places in the Philippines. And based on what I've seen, it is. We've just left the airport here, gone over a river, and going down into Cebu itself. It looks pretty nice. This picture, this is third world. We come to a stop sign. There's a guy out there selling something, and we're stopped at the stoplight. It's the longest stoplight I've ever seen in my life. Two little girls run up, and I must look like a sucker. They start singing. They sing very well. They won't stop singing. And they're staring at me. Finally, I go, "Randy, maybe you ought to give them a couple of pesos." And Randy says, "Don't roll down the window." So I didn't. I just turned and took the picture, and that seemed to make them happy. Honestly, there's probably some really good reasons not to roll down the window when you're in a place like this in this kind of situation. So anyway, we drove on. And Cebu has some nice-looking spots. You get something that looks like this, but right across the street from that, you'll see this. And this is probably at least 60% of the city when you're out driving around. We're going through, and finally I took that because I'd never seen a Taoist temple before. So we go by the Taoist temple, and we come to Ecotec. That is a government building that you can rent. It's a lecture center. The government brings in teachers and stuff and has lectures and that kinds of things, but there is space available to rent, so we went to Ecotec. That's the entrance. We pulled in, went straight to the dorm, straight to where I had a room, and how many people here remember Florida College in the 1970s? This will be deja vu all over again. That's where I'm staying, in this door right here. We run on campus. I go in, put a suitcase in this room. Then we go out to see where the lecture hall is going to be, because we're immediately going to start the lectureship the minute we step onto the campus. That's a little convenience store right in the middle of the place. I really liked it. You can get cold Coke for 25 cents. And bought one day, and a guy named Roland was with me, and I said, "Roland, I really like Coke." He says, "Do they have Coke in America?" I said, "Yeah, we do." Anyway, that's just it. Go right past the store. As soon as we got there, we had to go see what the room looked like. They hadn't cleaned off the table yet, but that was going to be the lecture room. So we looked at it, turned around, put my books down on this table, and I was standing. I can't remember who I was talking to. We just gotten into the room, turned around, set my books down, looked up to talk, and the earthquake hit. Y'all remember the earthquake. It was 6.9 centered on Dumaguete, which is normally where we would have landed. The first two trips we took over there, we landed in Dumaguete on Negros. That was the epicenter. Instead, we were on Cebu, and we still felt it. Come to find out, 113 people died in that earthquake, but not where we were. You know, it was over on Negros and Mindanao, more so. But that was the place where the lectureship was going to be. First afternoon, as soon as we got there, both Randy and I spoke. And then that night, we got together again, and I preached a sermon that I preached here called the Jerusalem Syndrome. That was the one where we talked about Jerusalem when it was being destroyed by the Romans. The Jews fought each other until the Romans were there. And then when the Romans backed off, they'd fight each other again. Very pertinent idea in the Philippines right now. But the way we did this lectureship for the next 2 days after the first night, We would both speak three times a day, and then we get then in the evening one of us would preach. At this particular lectureship, again, we used Romans 6 through 8 and Galatians, talking about the significance of the law of Moses. Thursday, everybody went home, except for me and Reese and Doug and Roland. Reese and Doug were from Mindanao. Most of the preachers who were there, oh, by the way, the next few pictures are bad. I don't know what I did wrong. I think I hit a button wrong on the camera. But these next preachers are fellows we support on Negros who came over to Cebu so we could be with them. That's Pablo Quimada. That's Olympio Sandalon, who's from Mindanao, not Negros. That's William Morados, Gerson Labid, and Marion Morados. Now, Marion had informed us that he was ill. Didn't realize how ill he was till I saw him. He was skin and bones. He had really lost weight. He had had an ulcer. He needed an, is it endoscopy or endoscopy? One of them, however you say it. He needed it, did not have the money to get one. So, you know, that was something that we definitely wanted to take care of, and we did. But through the course of the lectures, there were 47 preachers there. Took that picture just to prove that I really was there. Really interesting time. Really, really good time. Well, when we say 47 preachers, sometimes a preacher in the Philippines is somebody that was baptized a month ago but has enough zeal to want to spread the gospel. So a congregation gets started. So you could get somebody there that maybe has been preaching for 30 years and somebody who's been preaching for 2 weeks. You're just not really sure what's going to happen. Very interesting time, but finally they all went home. The only ones left were myself, Reese, and Doug, and Roland. On Thursday, I spent most of the day visiting with Reese and Doug, and who told me about Mindanao. If you're wondering about Mindanao, according to them, it's not nearly as dangerous as you think, as long as you stay in the right places. If you stay around General Santos City or Margos Satupig over where Olympio is, you're okay. But if you get deep into the provinces, that's when you have your trouble on Mindanao. So anyway, the last day I was there, Friday morning, just before I got on the plane, I decided I'd take some pictures of the Ecotech Center. That's the view looking out the window of the room where I was staying. That's the campus itself. That's a shrine. That's a little pool there at the bottom. Beautiful little place. That's the Virgin Mary. Highly Catholic country. That's a little bridge over a pond. Pretty spot. The reason I was interested, that's the water. You can't see a thing, I know. But there are about 1,000 tilapia sticking their mouths up in that picture. Can't see them. But that thing was so loaded with fish, you couldn't believe it. They're being raised commercially, actually. Another shrine on campus. That's just, if you want to go in and pray, that's where you go. That's the lobby. That's right out of the 1930s. And when you're in that thing, you say, Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall are coming in the door any second. I would go in there and sit with my books to work sometimes just because I liked the place. And this is the cafeteria. That is shades of Sutton Hall, 1971. I mean, it is almost, most of you don't know what that means. But I mean, it's a time warp. It was just almost incredible to see it. I mean, that is the Sutton Hall. So much for nostalgia. Friday came, time to go home. Roland rented a cab, and we went back to Lapu-Lapu City and the Cebu Airport. That's Roland, the guy that wanted to know if we had Coke in America. Got back on the plane, and 31 hours later, I was home. In a lot of ways, I think it was probably the best trip I've taken from the standpoint of what we learned and what we were able to do. Just a few perceptions. I know I'm going long, but I'm going to do it anyway. Perceptions. Number one, familiarity brings information. On the first trip, they were so interested in making a good impression and in putting their best foot forward that they really weren't going to say anything negative about anybody. It's kind of like you get up to preach a sermon about Peter and you say, Peter walked on water, and you neglect to say he sank. You know, that's pretty much the way it was on the first trip. By the third trip, you get a better view of how things really are. You see a little congregation that is slightly bigger than it was 4 years ago. And you realize, yes, they baptize people. Yes, they lose people. And they have many of the same problems we have. When you're out in the provinces, a lot of the young people want to get older, move to Manila, where hopefully they can find a job. And Manila is not a place that's conducive to the Christian life for a young person. Now, the big advantage in the Philippines is that the overall climate, especially in the provinces, is much more friendly to God than it is here. They have a lot of religious error, but they have a lot less humanism. Now, after being there a couple of times, they are more open to people who have been there several times. We had a situation that I doubt they would have said anything about the first trip I made. Talking to Ray Granetta, and this was confirmed by several sources, there is a preacher who has solicited us for money. We had not sent any, but we were considering meeting him on this trip because he said, my son is in the hospital, I need money. This particular preacher was in contact with a congregation in Texas. And the Texas congregation said, do you know any, evidently they trusted him, they said, do you know any men who are worthy of support? He gave them a list of 14 men. They sent money for him to distribute to the 14 men. Well, 10 of them got it. 4 didn't. And it really wasn't hard to figure out where the money went. Now, Filipinos are a little bit punchy about stories like this. They don't like to repeat them. And the reason is fear. They're afraid that if Americans hear stories like that, they'll get tired of all Filipinos and just cut support off from everybody. In 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 1, Paul said, it is commonly reported among you. There isn't much commonly reported over there if you're a first timer. By the third time, they're a little bit more inclined to let you know about the problems that they are trying to overcome. Now, this factor in and of itself is reason to maintain personal contact with the brethren who are over there. You find out the things that you want to know, things that you would never find out in a letter. Familiarity brings information. Money draws wolves. You might not want to hear this, but this is the way it is. And it's true in this country also. Money draws wolves. In the first century, there was a problem that the church had to deal with, and it was the problem of false teachers. Read 2 Peter chapter 2, and Peter says, here's the problem. False teachers who practice sensuality, greed, and they're puffed up. Great swelling words of vanity. In other words, it's about sex, money, and power. That's always what it's about when you talk about the false teacher. This is not uncommon in the Philippines. To find somebody who is preaching at one or two or three congregations who has a couple of girlfriends on the side, and everybody knows it, and who is getting support from many different congregations, collecting money from many different congregations, and not reporting it. and getting himself into position with two or three or four congregations where he kinds of forms a little diocese where he's in control. Now, don't be shocked by that. They had to deal with that kind of a situation in the first century. Now, if you ask me, why is it that they should have problems like that? Here's the reason. When they had appointed elders for them in every church, having prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord in whom they had believed. New Testament pattern. Elders in congregations. The congregations in the Philippines largely are small and poor. The people in a little hamlet don't travel. They don't have vehicles. So 20 or 25 people will meet in this little city. 4 miles down the road, you'll have another congregation of 20 or 25 people. There won't be a whole lot of men. The talent pool will be very small. So few congregations have elders. So if you are a man who is willing, you can preach. And if you are a man who is unscrupulous, you can take advantage. And this is fueled by bidding wars. And yes, I said bidding wars for preachers. Some American problems have drifted across the ocean. Now, if you talk about controversies regarding marriage, divorce, remarriage, one covenant which kind of grew out of MDR, whether or not you were a friend of Homer Haley's, a lot of these things have kind of spilled across the ocean. And there are preachers who go on tours taking money with them and saying, preach it our way, don't associate with those guys, and you can get more money from us. Their willingness to use wolves is just sort of astounding. Should not be surprising that when you put money on the table, the wolves suddenly spring up. But one good thing is when you put that money on the table, it makes it pretty clear who the wolves are. And it's bait. They weren't trying to bait anybody, but they made things pretty clear. Familiarity brings information, money draws wolves, and sowing seed produces results. We have an image in our mind. We hear a report of 10 baptisms at a gospel meeting. We think, oh, those congregations must be growing exponentially over there. Not so. They are not growing exponentially. They are simply making progress. They are probably making more progress overall than we are making here. But in the places where they are making progress, here is the key. In 2 Timothy 2 and verse 2, the things which you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. That's the key. You find faithful men. They don't have to be dynamic. Most of the wolves are dynamic. What you care about is finding faithful men who are grinders, who just continually get in and stay with it and keep teaching the Word of God. When you hear of the wolves, don't let it shock you. What we don't want to do is to let ourselves become soured on the grinders, because wolves are present. Those are the men that we truly want to support. In Matthew 28, and Jesus came up and spoke to them, saying, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. This is what we are trying to do. We are trying to spread the gospel of Christ. My brethren preach the same gospel that we try to preach. They preach the gospel that is contained in the Word of God. Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. When we preach the gospel, we preach that God raised His Son from the dead, and if a person will believe in Him, turn from their sins and confess their faith, then baptism will wash away their sins. The message has been preached for 2,000 years now. And we want to continue to do our part to see that the message continues to spread. If you're here tonight and you've not been obedient to that message, we saw one respond to it this morning. If you're here tonight and you have not responded to it, you have the opportunity, if you come forward while we stand and sing.